Dit is niet PA00 Nieuws, maar dit is PA0 Echo Tango Echo. De uitzendingen van Papa Alpha 00 Nieuws en van Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo vinden ieder vrijdagavond plaats om 20:30 op 145,462,5 MHz. Als deze frequentie bezet is, dan is het eventueel mogelijk dat we een frequentie iets hoger of iets lager gebruiken. De uitzending wordt herhaald dezelfde avond om 11 uur op de repeater PI2AMF en dat is op 430,050 MHz. Ook hier geldt, als de frequentie bezet is, dan doen we wat anders. In dit geval zenden we de uitzending uit zodra de frequentie vrij is. Dit is niet Papa Alpha 00 Nieuws, maar Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo. We hebben deze speciale roepnaam telkens afwisselend. Steeds 4 weken wel en dan weer 3 weken niet en dan weer 4 weken wel, et cetera. En nu zitten we in de periode dat we de roepnaam niet hebben. Dus dit is Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo. De website kennisplatform.nl is bij niet zo heel veel zendamateurs bekend. Het is een website die fabels en werkelijkheid over de schadelijkheid van straling van zenders behandelt. Op zich is het erg interessant. Ze hebben onder andere een artikel over een Zembla-uitzending van 2 maanden geleden. Daarin werd nogal een eenzijdig beeld, althans volgens deze website, nogal een eenzijdig beeld geschetst van de schadelijkheid van bijvoorbeeld mobiele telefoons. Ja, weliswaar is niet aan te tonen dat die straling echt onschadelijk is. Maar aan de andere kant stelt de website dat sinds 1999 toch 5 miljoen gebruikers van mobiele telefoons bijgekomen zijn, soms heel intensieve gebruikers. En dat sinds dat jaar het aantal gevallen van kanker veroorzaakt zou kunnen zijn door dit soort straling niet is toegenomen. RRL.org meldt een evenement rond de befaamde historische Route 66, een snelweg dwars door Amerika, ook bekend van veel films. Er is een evenement geweest waarbij langs de route 18 amateurstations QFV waren. En als ik het goed zie, was er ook een certificaat te behalen. DistaVlaanderen.be meldt dat er inmiddels 4 repeaters in België actief zijn voor Dista binnen de 2 meter band. Repeaters voor Dista maken binnen de 2 meter band gebruik van dezelfde frequenties als FM repeaters. Volgens mij is in België dat op 70 centimeter hetzelfde. In Nederland is dat anders. In Nederland hebben de FM repeaters een shift van 1,6 MHz en de Dista repeaters 7,6 en die hebben de uitgang helemaal boven in de amateurband. En België hebben voor zover ik weet bijna alle repeaters een uitgang boven in de 70 centimeter band en een shift van 7,6 MHz. Het Amerikaanse blad Business Week meldt deze week dat het maken van satellieten steeds meer binnen het bereik van hobbyisten komt. Hiermee komt het ook binnen het bereik van zendamateurs. Er is al een site een aantal jaren actief die bouwpakketten voor satellieten verkoopt, inclusief lanceermogelijkheid, dat is TubeSat. En ook op andere manieren wordt het steeds makkelijker mogelijk om satellieten te lanceren in de loze ruimte vaak die raketten nog bieden. Je ziet ook dat steeds meer universiteiten met eigen projecten komen en een satelliet is al rond de 10.000 tot $15.000 voor dat bedrag al te lanceren. De Belgische zusterorganisatie van Agentschap Telecom die kent een aantal frequenties toe voor de jacht, voor de jagers. Steeds vaker rapporteerden zendamateurs dat jagers bij hun klopjacht, met name de jaarlijkse klopjachten, gebruik maakten van de 2 meter of de 70 centimeter band. Met zendontvangers die meestal via webshops gekocht werden. Inmiddels heeft de BIPT een achttal frequenties in de band van 154 MHz voor de jacht toegekend. Bizar bericht op security.nl. De copyrightpolitie die beschermt de malware makers. Malware, dat zijn mensen die kwaadaardige software maken, vaak voor reclamedoeleinden. Dat is een website die zich daar tegen inspant. En die werden geblokkeerd door een Amerikaanse organisatie, zoals hier in Nederland meer of meer brein ook is, LeakID. En die hadden een klacht ingediend dat er op de malware, op dus de kwaadaardige software, auteursrecht zou berusten. En daarom waren een aantal accounts van medewerkers van deze organisatie die hier tegen waren, die waren geblokkeerd. Dus nu zie je dat de copyrightpolitie de makers van kwaadaardige software in bescherming neemt. Nou, een bizar bericht.
Dit is niet PA00 Nieuws, maar dit is PA0 Echo Tango Echo.
Zowel pi4raz.nl als darc.de melden dat in Duitsland commotie is ontstaan over de beoogde invoering van de CTCSS voor het openen van alle repeaters tegen het einde van 2014, zoals de IARO heeft verordoneerd. De gebruikers en repeaterbeheerders die vinden dat mensen onnodig op hoge kosten gejaagd worden. In Nederland hoor je die geluiden niet zo erg. De invoering van CTCSS is noodzakelijk vanwege het toegenomen aantal digitale repeaters die gebruik maken van dezelfde frequenties als de analoge repeaters. En door middel van CTCSS is het eenvoudig om deze twee typen repeaters van elkaar te scheiden. Althans om als luisteraar in FM geen hinder te hebben van de digitale repeaters. In Duitsland is nu voorgesteld om het minimaal tot 2020 uit te stellen. Duitsland is een van de landen met de hoogste penetratie aan digitale repeaters in Europa. Dus wat dat betreft hebben ze daar wel enig recht van spreken. Als die overlast er niet bestaat en zij zien geen probleem, dan lijkt het verzoek enigszins redelijk. Ook op pi4rz.nl wordt gemeld, wat ook al uitgebreid in de pers verschenen is, dat ProRail bezwaren heeft tegen de veilingen binnenkort van de digitale frequenties voor mobiel verkeer. ProRail heeft een eigen telefoonnet. Niet zo bekend is dat de spoorwegen ook in de tijd van het vastenet en het monopolie van PTT het recht hadden om een eigen telefoonnet te voeren. En dat deden ze ook. Ze hadden een vast eigen telefoonnet. En het gebeurde heel af en toe dat PTT daar ook gebruik van maakte. En dat kon je op een telefoonlijn horen doordat er een 400 hertz omwormertoontje op te horen was als het een NS-verbinding was. In ieder geval is het zo dat de overheid tegen economische zaken, die hebben tegen ProRail gezegd dat ze zelf maar met providers moeten onderhandelen, dat die niet een zodanig groot vermogen moeten gebruiken dat het ProRail net daarbij gestoord zou worden. Maar ProRail voelt er niets voor om op de stoel van EZ te gaan zitten als een soort scheidsrechter en zijn hierom naar de rechter gestapt. Een klein stukje nog van de ballonvossenjacht van de start. Ik ben altijd weer verbaasd hoe snel die ballon te horen is. Er is niet in het fragment gemonteerd. Je hoort de echte oplating. En vervolgens hoe snel het signaal op zo'n 20 kilometer afstand hier in Amersfoort, terwijl ik toch ongunstig zit voor die betreffende richting, hoe snel het signaal hoorbaar is. In eerste instantie hoor je heel even het baken en daarna schakel ik over naar de transponder. Daarna volgt het Engelstalige deel van deze uitzending.
De transponder klaar. En de laatste meter stouw die schiet nu boven Maarten uit. Ik denk nog een meter of twee. Nog een metertje ongeveer. En dan zal dit het moment zijn waarop het hele zaakje losgaat. Oké, Maarten. Jo, ga maar. Jo, hij is nu los. De ballon is los. Ik zou zeggen, iedereen die onderweg is, heel veel plezier. En degene die hem vindt, die weet ons te vinden, want op de zonde zelf staan onze gegevens op. Maar waarschijnlijk zal de VSA volgploeg als eerste ter plaatse zijn. Ik ga de microfoon retour geven aan het station in Nieuwegein. Heren, ook daar veel succes met de verbindingen. Dit was Papa India via Hector Romeo Zulu PTT.
Delta 4, Echo Hotel.
Papa Echo 9, Whisky. Papa Delta 3, ja, Whisky Romeo.
Delta 2, Whisky Victor Hotel.
Papa Alpha 3, Japan, Florida, Lima.
Papa 1,
Papa Delta 3, Mike Romeo uit Den Haag.
De ballon kwam na 2 uur net voor 4 naar beneden bij Biddinghuizen. De eerste die hem gewonnen heeft, dat is het team van PNL LEZ en PE5 Echo Delta Whisky. Tweede plaats voor Papa Bravo 4 Papa Tango en Papa Alpha 3 Delta Alpha Mike. En de derde plaats was voor PNL SOM en PA2 GLA samen met Jos Becks die geen call heeft. This is not Papa Alpha 00 News, but this is Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo.
CQ, 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 calling all radio amateurs and shortwave listeners. This is GB2RS, the news broadcasting service of the Radio Society of Great Britain. It's read to you by G4NJH in the MP3 version. Good morning, this is GB2RS News. It's Sunday the 9th of September 2012. Here are the main news headlines. ARDF World Championships this week. New allocation in the Philippines. Gough Island to be activated. The RSGB ARDF World Championships team flies out to Serbia on Monday the 10th of September. All 9 of the UK competitors are self-funded. UK ARDF events using the IARU rules have to be run by the RSGB since 2002. In contrast, most Eastern European nations have been pursuing this radio sport for over 50 years and have a great deal of experience. These nations dominate the results, with Russia, Ukraine and the Czech Republic particularly successful. There are 4 days of competition, and the result will be posted on the event website each evening at www.ardf2012.org. Wednesday the 12th sees the first of the classic races, with both the 3.5 and 144 megs bands in use. The inaugural World Sprint ARDF Championships take place on Thursday the 13th with this format, and this format uses 3.5 megs. Friday the 14th is the second day of the classic races, with competitors using the band they did not use 2 days earlier. Finally, there's a fox oaring race on the Saturday, and this also uses the 3.5 megs band. Watch out for the M40 and M70 team results. In individual results, Andrew G4KWQ M40 and David M3WDD M50 are our best prospects, and there's a chance that the RSGB might get someone in the podium, on the podium even, for the first time. Amateurs in the Philippines have been granted some additional spectrum. Depending on license class, amateurs will be permitted to operate 135.7 kHz to 137.8, 472 kHz to 479, and 7.201 MHz to 7.3 MHz, with Class B and Class C allowed to operate HF mobile. ZS6KX will be going to Gough Island sometime this month. He's hoping to be issued with the call sign ZD9KX. If you made contact with ZD5KN on Gough Island, you will not be getting any credit for the contact, as that call sign has never been issued. Cray Valley members started operating 2012L on the 25th of July. In the first 10 hours, over 3,300 contacts were made. The station closes 4 p.m. today, 9th of September. As well as introducing visitors to amateur radio, the station exceeded the world record for special event station QSOs on the 21st of August and reached their target figure of 60,000 QSOs at 2305 UTC on Friday the 31st of August.
This is PA0 ETE, Papa Alpha Zero Echo Tango Echo.
You're listening to GB2 RS read by G4NGH, the MP3 version. Solar factual data for the period from Friday the 31st of August to Thursday the 6th of September, compiled by Neil Clark. Considering there were two large and magnetically complex groups visible, they both remained relatively quiet and only produced numerous C-class solar flares, except for a single M1 solar flare on the 6th. Solar flux levels increased to 146 units on the 1st, but then declined to 128 by the 6th. The average was 137 units. The 90-day solar flux average on the 6th remained unchanged from the previous week at 124 units. X-ray flux levels declined from B9.8 units on the 1st to B4.4 by the 6th, and an average was B6.9 units. Geomagnetic activity started at quiet levels on the 31st, with an AP index of only 3 units, but by the 3rd, activity increased to peak at 40 units. This was in response to a coronal mass ejection that departed the Sun on the 31st. Just as that storm was declining, a coronal hole disturbance arrived, which allowed geomagnetic activity to continue to the end of the period. The average was AP 20 units. Solar wind data from the ACE spacecraft saw solar wind speeds increase from 290 km per second to peak at 590 by the 5th. Particle densities increased to 54 particles per cubic centimetre on the 3rd and remained elevated at about 20 particles per cubic centimetre till the 6th. BZ varied between -3 and +2 nanoteslas on the quietest day and between -23 and +15 nanoteslas on the 3rd. A good week for many VHF-UHF operators, with a stable high-pressure system producing extended tropo on 144 megs and above, particularly towards France, Germany and Spain. Also, disturbed geomagnetic levels on the 3rd resulted in auroral propagation on the 6th and 2 metres, lasting some 12 hours, and at peak extending down to central England. Finally, the solar forecast from Sunday the 9th of September. This week, the quiet side of the sun is expected to rotate into view. Therefore, solar activity should be low, with only C-class solar flares taking place. Solar flux levels are expected to decline and be in the 90s later in the week. Geomagnetic activity should be quiet until later in the week, when a small recurring coronal hole is expected to arrive and last into the weekend. MUFs during daylight hours at equal latitude should be about 24 megs for the south, 21 megs for the north. Darkness hour lows should be about 11 megs. Path this week to India should have a maximum usable frequency with a 50% success rate of about 23 megs, but the best working frequency, meaning 90% success, is more likely to be 18 megs. Best time to try this path, that's to India, between 1100 and 1600 hours. And that's it for another week from the propagation team.
This is not Papa Alpha Zero Zero News, but this is Papa Alpha Zero Echo Tango Echo.
Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1831, with a release date of September 14th, 2012, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Two illegal operations in Canada are evicted from 2 meters. The Radio Society of Great Britain takes on Region 1 of the International Amateur Radio Union over the endorsement of a more liberal BPL standard. The FAA to begin a new study on the use of broadband devices on aircraft in flight, and a safety warning about those tiny button batteries. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1831, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
Radio Amateurs of Canada has announced that two cases of frequency incursion to the 2-meter band by business users have been resolved. Amateur Radio Newsline's Aaron Jensen, VA7AEJ, reports.
In the first incident, a transportation company based in Rheinfeld, Manitoba, was observed to be operating illegally on 144.100 MHz. The company in question had purchased VHF radios from a U.S.-based supplier who failed to indicate correct licensing procedures. Once contacted by Radio Amateurs of Canada, the company agreed to immediately cease operating in the 2-meter band and shifted its operation to a business band frequency. Industry Canada was notified of the incursion and continues to work with the company to secure a licensed channel. In addition to illegally transmitting inside the amateur radio 2-meter band, this operation posed a threat to low signal operations across a wide portion of North America. In the second matter, a home moving company was observed to be operating on 144.940 MHz. The company in question is based in Winkler, Manitoba, but the operation was observed in Alberta during the moving of a house. In this case, the company had already been licensed to specific frequencies with Industry Canada. However, it had requested 144.940 MHz as a channel. Their request was denied and a business band channel was issued. However, the company failed to check its license paperwork and assumed it had been approved for their requested frequency. As in the first case, the moving company was also contacted by Radio Amateurs of Canada and agreed to move their operations to their correctly licensed frequencies. Given their wide geographic operations, Industry Canada had licensed their operation on 4 separate frequencies, including 140.730, 154.325, 158.940, and 151.730 MHz. In both cases, it appears that frequencies in the 2-meter band were chosen by these businesses because their new VHF radios defaulted to that frequency range. This is definitely an indication that the actual radio gear being used is likely modified amateur radio transceivers. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Aaron Jensen, VA7AEJ in Lumbee, British Columbia, Canada.
The use of equipment intended for amateur radio operation outside of the amateur bands or by persons who do not hold a Canadian amateur radio certificate is illegal. What punitive action Industry Canada might impose on the two companies for their incursion into the 2-meter band is at this time unknown. The Radio Society of Great Britain has formally asked the International Amateur Radio Union Region 1 Electromagnetic Compatibility Working Group to reconsider its policy on the draft European Broadband Over Power Line, or PLT, standard. One that the RSGB claims to threaten a 38 dB increase in RF pollution over much of the shortwave radio spectrum. The request from the RSGB came in an August 28th letter to C.M. Verholt, who is the chairman of the IARU Region 1 EMC Working Group, from the RSGB's Don Beatty, G3BJ. In it, Beatty says that there is no way that the emissions from devices meeting this new standard can satisfy the essential requirements of the EMC directive outside the notched frequencies. As such, G3BJ says that the IARU Region 1 EMC Working Group is in effect condoning overriding the essential requirements of the Electromagnetic Compatibility Directive by backing the standard. He says this action of the Commission is clearly contrary to the law of the European Union and therefore open to judicial review. Beatty goes on to say that the new emission levels, if sanctioned, will inevitably become the baseline for future standards. In this context, he notes that there are already some new drafts that are circulating which reference the more liberal proposed emission levels. Beatty ends his letter by saying that the RSGB hopes that common sense will prevail and that the IARU Region 1 will amend its position on the matter. IARU Region 1 EMC Working Group had previously added its support to the new pan-European electromagnetic compatibility standard that the RSGB so vigorously opposes. The FCC has sent out a notice to the manufacturers, importers, distributors, and users of private land mobile two-way radio that the deadline to switch to 12.5 kHz narrowband transmission is January 1, 2013. This is for two-way radio gear that operates in the 150 to 174 MHz and 421 to 470 MHz frequency bands, not including the 2-meter or 70-centimeter amateur service spectrum from 144 to 148 MHz or 430 to 450 MHz. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Davis, W2JKD, reports.
According to the FCC, the reason for this mandated change is to promote the efficient use of private land mobile radio spectrum and to facilitate the introduction of advanced technologies. In other words, this government edict is not only applicable to analog FM-based telecommunications, but to current and all future digital modes as well. The FCC also notes that private land mobile radio licenses are not required at this time to modify their licenses to remove wideband emission designators. However, the presence of a wideband emission designator on a license does not authorize the operation after January 1, 2013, and that does not comply with the new narrowbanding standard. The FCC release also reminds manufacturers, subject to the limited exceptions, that they must cease manufacturing and importing equipment that's capable of 25 kHz mode operation in the VHF and UHF bands by the narrowbanding transition deadline. I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD.
While the amateur service is exempt from the new narrowbanding mandate, do not be surprised if future generations of off-the-shelf VHF and UHF ham gear is built to conform to this new commercial radio standard, especially if a manufacturer's primary business is in supplying private land mobile service radio gear with ham gear as a secondary product line. It's simply less expensive for them to do it that way. In a similar move, New Zealand's telecommunications regulator has issued an edict to all manufacturers and importers of UHF CB radio equipment with 25 kHz channel spacing. It notes that in accordance with the nation's General User Radio License for Citizens Band Operation, equipment that does not comply with the new narrowbanding specification cannot be sold in that nation if it's manufactured or imported after December 1st. Only current stock of 25 kHz radios on hand and merchandise in the domestic New Zealand distribution pipeline can be sold after that date. According to top FCC officials, FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski will soon circulate the FCC's long-awaited framework for reclaiming and re-auctioning broadcast spectrum for wireless use and repacking remaining stations. This with the target of having a report and order voted by mid-2013 and the auctions completed by the end of 2014. The document is described as a comprehensive treatment rather than the first of a series of items. As such, it's expected to contain many detailed proposals that the FCC will then seek comment on and adjust as needed. The FCC is trying to move far enough down the road with this initial proposal to make the auction goal of 2014 a realistic one. While ham radio is not directly involved in this frequency shuffle, there's always the chance that some bands like 222 to 225 MHz and 50 to 54 MHz could be impacted. This is because 222 to 225 MHz lies between what's known as the spectrum between the VHF low and VHF high band TV channels. 50 to 54 MHz, that we call 6 meters, is actually VHF low band TV channel 1. If the sell-off of the coveted UHF broadcast spectrum results in a lot of TV stations returning to the VHF bands, then both these spectral parcels could come under some future reallocation scrutiny. We're not saying that will happen that way, but ham radio has to keep a careful watch on how it might be affected in the years to come. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W8RLC repeater, serving Lowell, Michigan.
This is PA0 ETE, Papa Alpha Zero Echo Tango Echo.
It's going to be a while before airline passengers can use their wireless electronic devices during an entire flight. Amateur Radio Newsline Stephen Robertson, KB3HGM, is near the nation's capital with the details.
On Monday, August 27, the Federal Aviation Administration said that it is starting a process to study the issue, with a timeline that means it will take at least until March 2013 for a recommendation and likely longer for action. Smartphones, laptops, and tablet computers are common in the passenger cabin, and some pilots are using these devices in flight. But passengers have to shut off electronic devices when the plane is below 10,000 feet because of worries that they might interfere with electronics in the cockpit. And anything that has a broadband connection that cannot be disabled must be kept off for the entire flight. Now, in its recent statement, the FAA says that it will form a committee to study the issue for 6 months and then make recommendations. The group will include representatives of the mobile technology companies, aircraft manufacturers, airlines, pilots, flight attendants, and even representatives of passenger associations. The agency will also ask for public input. The FAA often uses such aviation rulemaking committees when it is considering regulatory changes, and their discussions often last for months and sometimes even years. It should be noted that the FAA doesn't actually ban the devices. However, its rules state that airlines can only allow devices that have been tested and proven not to interfere with a given make and model aircraft's electronics. With thousands of devices on the market and new ones coming out each day, airlines simply ban them all during takeoff and landing, and it looks as if that's the way it will continue for some time to come. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Robertson, KB3HGM in Silver Spring, Maryland.
As to ever getting permission for hams to use radio gear like handy talkies on a commercial airline flight, there's no consideration being given to ever permit any hobby radio electronics to be used. The FAA says that allowing cell phone use during flights isn't under consideration either. Not lighting a broadcast tower for more than a decade will likely cost Reniker Broadcasters Corporation a hefty $20,000 fine from the FCC. Reniker owns the antenna structure located at Maracao, Puerto Rico. Responding to a complaint, an FCC Enforcement Bureau agent inspected the tower and found the structure had never been painted and had no lights installed. Because the tower had been that way for more than 10 years, the commission found the violation to be egregious and doubled the proposed penalty to $20,000. Reniker was given the customary 30 days to submit a sworn statement certifying that the tower is now in full compliance with the FCC rules and also to pay the penalty or file an appeal. The FCC has affirmed a $4,000 notice of apparent liability against Good Karma Broadcasting, this for airing contest information without fully disclosing the terms. The case concerns WKRN-AM in Cleveland. The FCC received a complaint alleging that from November 2007 to September 2009, the station conducted what the complainant calls a bogus contest called Who Said That? In it, those calling into the stations were required to accurately identify who actually voiced a clip that was played on the air. In 2009, the FCC wrote to WKRN asking about the contest. The agency said that in its reply, WKRN admitted the bit aired regularly from early 2007 until the summer of 2008, and then sporadically thereafter. Once someone guessed the voice, a new clip would air. The station admitted that for more than 20 months, no one guessed the voice behind the clip. Also that the station was not announcing all the prizes, but rather focusing on the new prize. Also that it eventually stopped announcing them unless a listener called in and tried to guess the voice behind the last clip. Good Karma also said that by December 2009, some of the original prizes were no longer available. It claimed that if a listener correctly identified the voice in a clip, the station would have offered a similar prize package to the one that was originally announced. But the FCC wouldn't buy that explanation. In affirming the fine, it stated that licensees must accurately disclose all of the material terms of a contest. Also, that licensees must conduct the contest substantially as announced or advertised. Good Karma Broadcasting was given the customary 30 days to pay the fine or to file a further appeal. If you're a young ham or know of one, you might want to spread the word that Episode 3 of the Youth in Amateur Radio podcast is now online and ready for download. In this installment, the young hosts discuss what you should do after earning your amateur radio license, including getting your first radio and joining a radio club. Here's a sample.
To find a ham who will be able to assist you in finding your first radio, go to a local radio club or become a member. Radio clubs will help you find your first radio, and they have usually monthly meetings which discuss local issues in amateur radio, and also can help organize fun activities like box hunts.
The Youth and Amateur Radio podcast is produced by and for the youngsters in amateur radio. Its primary hosts are Anthony Spinelli, K2RCN, Sterling Coffee, N0SSC, and Jacob Keogh, KD0NVX. Other voices include Joe Andrews, KD0LOS, and Matthew Chambers, NR0Q. Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, serves as the show's executive producer. To hear the complete program and the two that preceded it, simply take your web browser to yarphams.com. You can also find it on iTunes under Youth in Amateur Radio Podcast. Some names in the news. We lead off with Amateur Radio Newsline's own Norm Seeley, KI7UP, who tells us that he recently scored 100% on the State of Arizona traffic school test. While he doesn't know if he broke any records, Norm says that he finished the exam in less than 4.5 minutes. And at that point, he got up and left his computer after seeing that he had answered all questions correctly. We say, congratulations. Regardless of the upcoming outcome of the November presidential election, don't be too surprised if Oregon Representative Greg Walden, W7EQI, is named to the chairmanship of the Republican National Congressional Committee. News reports say that House Speaker John Boehner recently gave a broad hint when he praised Walden by saying that he would soon have a bigger job. While the post doesn't get much attention from the general public, it's of major importance on Capitol Hill and is often viewed as a step up on the House leadership ladder. This is because the chairman plays a key role in distributing millions of dollars in campaign help, in recruiting candidates, and in making the tough calls on which districts to bet heavily on. Turning to the ham radio social scene, all eyes will be on the city of Starkville, Mississippi, the weekend of October 5th and 6th. That's when hams from around the country and around the world are invited to join in on the 40th anniversary of the founding of MFJ Enterprises by the company's founder, Martin Jew, K5FLU.
It's going to be a fun event. We're opening all the factories up, tours. We'll have people working there, the machines running, and you can see everything. We're going to have a free lunch. Come on over. We'll feed you and some good old fried chicken down there. And we're going to have a free tailgating. You bring your stuff. And we'll have a VE session for taking your license test. And we're going to have a special event station with our club station, K5MFJ. And we're going to have door prizes from each company, from MFJ, from Ameritron, from High Gain, Cushcraft, Mirage, and Vectronics, and everybody's invited. We hope everybody comes.
Again, the dates for the MFJ Enterprises 40th anniversary party are October 5th and 6th at the company's headquarters in Starkville, Mississippi. For more information, take your web browser to www.mfjenterprises.com. And oh yeah, I hope to see you there. 2 weeks later, on October 12th, 13th, and 14th, the joint PacificCon and ARRL 2012 National Convention will take place at the Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara, California. Hosted by the Mount Diablo Amateur Radio Club, PacificCon is considered the premier West Coast ham radio gathering. And this year, with the addition of the ARRL Expo, planners are going all out to make it the best ever. And by going all out, we mean some 80 forums, a huge exhibit hall featuring all of the well-known ham radio manufacturers, distributors, and retailers, a huge flea market, and several special gatherings. Among those who will be appearing at this year's PacificCon is amateur radio's best-known educator and the co-host of the TV webcast Ham Nation, Gordon West, WB6NOA. Gordo will be the keynote speaker, presenting the Saturday opening address, and word is that this is already a complete sellout. Also attending is NASA astronaut Lee Morin, KF5DDB. He's been announced as the evening banquet featured speaker. Morin served as a mission specialist on the Space Shuttle Atlantis for STS-110 mission that launched in April of 2002. And flying in all the way from Lincoln, Nebraska is ham radio's favorite kit-building enthusiast, Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB. Eisenberg will be giving his acclaimed talk and demonstration titled Kit Building 101 and 102 at PacificCon. Add to that the ARRL Expo, an all-day Friday antenna seminar, special event station WD1AW-6, and so much more that there's no time to mention at all. And you have the makings of a great West Coast ham radio gathering, and you can find out more by simply going to www.pacificcon.org on the World Wide Web. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur.
This is PA0ETE, Papa Alpha Zero, Echo, Tango Echo.
An upcoming article in a popular ham radio online publication will pique your interest if you're interested in the future of the hobby and what some of those in it are now doing to ensure its future. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD, has the details.
If you are a reader of World Radio Online, keep an eye open for an interesting column by Carol Perry, WB2MGP. Back in June, Carol and one of her Radio Club of America young achievers, Austin Schaller, KD0FAA, accepted an invitation from Dr. Chip Cohen, W1YW, to visit his facility in Waltham, Massachusetts. Dr. Cohen is the inventor of fractal antenna technology, and in 1988 built the world's first fractal element antenna. He is also the founder and chief technology officer of Fractal Antenna Systems, and was interested in meeting with the 17-year-old ham. This after KD0FAA gave a presentation on fractal technology at the Radio Club of America Technical Symposium in Dallas, Texas last November. According to Perry, W1YW attributes his ham radio background as being responsible for his career choices and interests. She tells Amateur Radio Newsline that KD0FAA was inspired by the experience, even more so when Dr. Cohen invited the teenage ham to co-author an article with him. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
WB2MGP says this is what she calls the ham radio ripple effect at its very best. You can read the entire story in the next issue of World Radio Online when it hits your email inbox. Amateur astronomers last week reported a bright fireball on the planet Jupiter that appears to be a result of a small asteroid hitting the planet during the early hours of September 10th. As the fireball faded, the attention has turned to trying to discover any possible debris around the impact site. Observers will be monitoring the region in the nights ahead to see what, if anything, surfaces. Updates will be posted online at spaceweather.com. A fascinating amateur radio on the International Space Station, or ARIS, contact was held on Friday, September 7th. This between astronaut Sunita Williams, KD5PLB, and students at the Michael Stott Gymnasium in Michael Stott, Germany. The clarity of the space-to-Earth link via ham radio was amazing. It enabled Williams to answer 14 questions posed by the students during the 10-minute pass. Here's a sample.
Jessica, what was the most interesting scientific project you were involved in at the ISS? Over.
I think the most interesting thing is the investigations we're doing on ourselves to see what happens to the human body in space for a long period of time. We're doing bone density, muscle measurements, workouts, different nutrition projects we're doing, and all of that is going to help us understand what happens to the human body after a long time so we can prepare the next generation, your generation, to go further to the moon and back to the moon and onto Mars. Over.
With this being a political season here in the United States, one student was curious if astronauts can vote from space.
Larissa, how do American astronauts vote for the president?
Great question. Actually, we vote by state in the U.S., and I am from a Florida resident, so I actually voted before I left. But you can vote from space. People have done that who are from the state of Texas. Over.
Over 1,600 students, teachers, and others were in attendance, as well as representatives from German radio, television, and newspapers. The entire contact was video recorded and is posted online at tinyurl.com/iss-german-contact. This year's ICOM-sponsored D-Star QSO party runs from 0 hours UTC on Friday, September 21st, to 2,400 hours on Sunday, the 23rd. The goal of the D-Star QSO party is to communicate through as many D-Star repeaters as possible throughout the world. All operators who submit an approved log will be eligible for the prize draw, with winners randomly selected for each prize. For more information on this year's event, take your web browser to tinyurl.com/dstar-contest-2012. NDX, word that DL3JH is active stroke 6Y5 from Jamaica through September 22nd. His operation should be on all of the high-frequency bands using CW and SSB. QSL via his home call sign only. PT2OP will be operational as 3D2OP from Fiji between October 7th and the 14th. His activity will be holiday style on the high-frequency bands. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. And speaking of Fiji, PY7ZY will be on as 3D2ZY from there between October 11th and the 15th. This just prior to his participation in the Tarawa Island Western Kiribati de-expedition. His operation will also be on the high-frequency bands, with QSLs also going via his home call sign. F6ICX will be active as 5R8IC from St. Marie Island, Madagascar between November 10th and December 9th. His operation will be holiday style, operating CW, RTTY, and PSK-63 on 20 through 10 meters. QSL via his home call sign is listed on QRZ.com. SQ1DWR will be active signing stroke CE3 from Chile between October 10th and the 22nd. Operations will be on 40 through 10 meters using CW only. QSL is directed by the operator. YJ8RN is currently visiting Low Island in the Torres Island group and is active as YJ8RN/P. The length of stay is unknown and his operation has been mainly on 20 meters SSB. QSL direct only to Rod Newell, Box 905, Port Vila, Vanuatu. Lastly, members of the Invoker team will be active as EG5INT from Columbretes Island between September 20th to the 24th. No frequencies or operating schedule has yet been announced. If you work them, please QSL only via EA5KA. And finally this week, a warning from the Center for Disease Control saying that children and small button batteries are a dangerous and increasingly common problem for one another. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, tells us why.
According to a new Center for Disease Control report, in 1998, battery-related injuries sent 1,900 children to the emergency room. In 2010, that number had risen to 4,800 cases being reported. Overall, more than 40,000 children were admitted to emergency rooms nationwide between 1997 and 2010. Almost three-quarters of them were 4 years old or younger. 1 in 10 children required hospitalization. 14 of them died. Now the CDC has singled out button batteries as the most potentially harmful type for young children to be near. These are the small, thin, round batteries often used to power watches, hearing aids, and other small devices. They are easy to swallow, and they can get stuck in a child's esophagus, leading to serious injury or death. In fact, the CDC report says that 12 of the 14 child mortalities were attributed to button batteries, and that the remaining two also likely involved them. The data, primarily from the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System, was collected and analyzed by the Federal Consumer Product Safety Commission. The report states that the CPSC is urging the electronics industry and battery manufacturers to develop warnings and industry standards to prevent serious injuries and deaths from button batteries. The symptoms of a battery ingestion include vomiting, abdominal pain, fever, and diarrhea, as well as difficulty breathing and swallowing. As these symptoms can be attributed to numerous causes, it's difficult to diagnose battery ingestion quickly. The report's authors point out that this is especially true if a child swallows a battery when no one is around to see them do it. Battery safety standards for children's toys are dictated by law. All batteries must be inaccessible in toys designed for children under age 3, while toys for kids under age 12 must make batteries under a certain size inaccessible. Even so, at least 3 of the deaths noted in the report were caused by batteries from devices not meant for children. These include a remote car alarm, a garage door opener, and a radio remote control. A new law is being considered by Congress that may require childproofing for button battery enclosures on all consumer products. Meantime, it's important that parents and caregivers be aware of the potential hazards associated with battery exposure, and ensure that products containing them are either kept away from children or that the batteries are secured safely in the product. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission says that if a child swallows a battery, you should immediately contact your local poison control center, your family doctor, or the 24-hour National Battery Ingestion Hotline at 202-625-3333. You can learn more about this hazard and how to proceed in the event a child does swallow a battery at tinyurl.com/kids-button-batteries. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, TWIT TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available on Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. So for now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk in Los Angeles, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in Southern Mississippi, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline, it's copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.
Dit is niet Papa Alpha 00 Nieuws, maar Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo. We hebben deze speciale roepnaam telkens afwisselend. Steeds 4 weken wel en dan weer 3 weken niet en dan weer 4 weken wel, et cetera. En nu zitten we in de periode dat we de roepnaam niet hebben. Dus dit is Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo. De uitzendingen van Papa Alpha 00 Nieuws en van Papa Alpha 0 Echo Tango Echo vinden iedere vrijdagavond plaats om 20:30 op 145,462,5 MHz. Als deze frequentie bezet is, dan is het eventueel mogelijk dat we een frequentie iets hoger of iets lager gebruiken. De uitzending wordt herhaald dezelfde avond om 11 uur op de repeater PI2AMF en dat is op 430,050 MHz. Ook hier geldt als de frequentie bezet is, dan doen we wat anders. In dit geval zenden we de uitzending uit zodra de frequentie vrij is. Dit is niet PA00 Nieuws, maar dit is PA0 Echo Tango Echo.